Welcome back, everybody, to a special edition of Perf Bites, News of the Damned. We are here with Heinrich Rexed, who is, Heinrich, what's your official title? Is it evangelist, guru, specialist?
Performance chef?
I would say chef, or I say partner solution advocate.
There we go. We have a chef and partner solution advocate for Neotis. And for those of you who are not familiar, Neotis produces the well-known product NeoLoad.
Yes.
And NeoSense. And as a sponsor of News of the Damned, we wanted to invite Heinrich to, you know, give us some background on the company for those of you who may not be familiar with Neotis. And in part two, we'll be taking a look at the actual products themselves. So we get a little bit of introduction in this show, and then in a coming show, we'll do a part two where we'll do a little bit of a deep dive.
And of course, folks, right off the top of the bat, if you want to learn, and not that to still to a lot of people, this would be the might be new products. You can go find them at neotys.com. And I think it's worldwide. Even the cloud stuff for Neotis is so worldwide. Neotis is cloud,
definitely.
Right? Which is cool. Yeah. Awesome. Heinrich, welcome to the show, man. It's great to have your sponsorship, and it's been great to see you at a couple of the events this spring. It was pretty awesome.
Thanks. Thanks for making this show happening. At least we can be part of this. I'm a great listener of Perf Bite, so I'm really thrilled to be here today, live, and discussing about the company.
We are happy to have you. So let's dive right in, and let's give our listeners a little bit of a background on the company. And so, how did Neotis get started? I mean, what was the motivation? There's usually, hey, tool doesn't have X, or there's a gap in the market. What was kind of the originating event or item?
So the three main founders were developers from for a company. They needed to do some load testing at that time. So that was 13 years ago. So they looked at the market. So they were obviously legacy tools. They were open sources. And they were trying to figure out if there was any solution that would be quite easy to use, productive for their project. And they didn't find out. So they say, hey, why don't we bring something on the market that will be between open source and between legacy tools, but mainly focus on making things easy. Make things productive, especially when you have to create testing scenarios.
Yeah, I would say that is an area that most open source tools have not addressed, which is that ease of use piece. They're much more likely to throw labor at a problem versus tool acumen in this case. So it that's very interesting that was one of the driving items, which is ease of use to be able to get to their performance testing goals. So you mentioned that you've been around 13 years, so 2004, 2005. What are some of the highlights over that past decade? You know, some things that you can say, hey, we did this, we did it very well, and everyone followed us, and so on and so forth.
So we started by delivering a product that was focused on designing scenarios through the GUI. So without any scripting languages and make the things more easier and more accessible for the load testing community or newbies in the load testing area.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we are mainly a technology company at the beginning, so we were focused on, okay, let's focus on new technologies. We will forget the old stack, the old protocols. So we were focusing on the technology such as Flex, WebSocket, and the others. So we were trying to get the best support on this at that time. And that was the main objective at that time. And now we started to change because technology is always important. But we want to bring things around. How could we provide great, really good features on automations. Again, let's reduce the time to create testing assets. So design, but also the maintenance of the testing scenarios. So that's the main thing which we will really focus on the moment.
Oh, excellent. And I note that, you know, going through some of your literature and your tools, you're hitting areas that are kind of weak in other solution sets, such as audio and video, you know, being able to manage that effectively on download. You know, some of the other tools in the market don't quite have that that level of maturity in those areas.
I think we mainly were working a couple of years back on opportunities. So when we had some requests on the testing adaptive streaming 6 years ago, then we, for us, it was like a challenge. So we thought that it was, we have to do something here because maybe it will be a big technology used by the streaming industry or for go to meetings or delivering corporate messages around the different people. Mm-hmm. So that's why we invest all, so much time on this area, for example.
So just listening to you and say, hey, here's a challenge we had with a customer and also we see a big market for it. It seems like there are all these little pieces of technology or interests that come along that may continue to drive you on the innovation side. Can you speak a little bit more to that and what you see driving the company right now?
At the moment, yeah, the big thing, I mean, I guess it's the similar thing for the other software vendors in the load testing industry. It's the agile DevOps, where continuous delivery, where the way we've been delivering load testing or performance testing for during a project lifecycle have changed. It brings more complexity. So we are very obsessed in how could we integrate in a tool chain, how could we publish our testing data or testing assets within different solutions, be part of a pipeline, fully bring values when it comes to automation.
As we move into, you know, Agile and DevOps, a lot of testing is being pushed further left in the life cycle. And both Mark and I see and others see, hey, we're getting people that are using these tools that are not mature as performance testers. Can you speak to how your tool helps those users who are not as mature as performance testers, how it helps them get up to speed rapidly, how it helps them to deliver, maybe even how it helps them to ensure quality?
So yes, that's true that a couple of years back was the people, performance engineer, architect or performance testers were the first point of contact with DevOps when the shift left. Now developers are more brings more influence in within the company, especially in the load testing. Mm-hmm. But it's really a challenge when you have to address, I can say, pure performance KPI that are very meaningful for performance engineers. And then suddenly you show them to developers that doesn't have the been trained or have the habits of reading those reports. So it brings more challenge. But the thing is, we've always been focusing on let's bring something easy to use, which with a very fast learning curve. So I think that's why some of the developers really like the product in a sense where they don't have to take too much time to create testing assets. And that's for us, it's a really positive message from the developer communities. But still, I mean, if people want to be focused on coding their testing assets, then yes, I would say that we have to make some progress on that area because we wanted to make it simple with bringing less scripting or complexity in creating those testing assets.
Do you find, Henrik, that sometimes a dev engineer who really lives in the code, and let's say they live in features, the user story definition, the functionality that they're building, and they really do live in the code, that some of the more advanced complexity of NeoLoad they don't live in the ops world, right? So they don't appreciate all of that power. But is that sort of driving some of their experience and kind of the future of Neolo?
I think it's more about how could we help developers to create their scenarios, like component mm-hmm. testing or API testing, in a very easy and relative yeah. way. And then take Neoload, plug it to the pipeline, and be able to run tests on and be able to trend and see regressions. I would say that on other features that would say more focus on testing the user experience or bringing the one emulations, I think those features are more relevant for when you do testing later on the project, where we have more represented environment with more component connected, where you have a new UI in front of it. So you can really deliver more complex tests, I would say.
So more complexity, but still at the API level or earlier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Henrik, in the shift left kind of initiatives, when we saw you at Dynatrace, one of our mutual friends, Andy Grabner, likes to talk about this idea of shifting right so far that you come all the way to the right, that it ends up coming all the way around and being on the left. And that there is this, with DevOps, this amazing continuous capability that becomes automated. So maybe you can give a comment about how Neoload helps these developers understand the real world a little bit better. We're not just shifting left, but we're bringing information about the real world, about ops, into the developer experience.
I mean, having a solution like Dynatrace in your production environment, or even in the testing environment or performance environments, is a really great advantage. Because you can really see what happens, and you can also take advantage of the knowledge that you have in production. Mm-hmm. So you can easily do some sort of predictive analysis, saying here is the behavior here in this environment. I've seen this in production. So I can really be able to make decisions or say, well, if I have in these situations, then I could probably have a better conversion rate or whatever is behind.
Right.
And also, I think having a Dynatrace in production is also real, great in the sense where, let's say, I need to do a load testing on a really major sales event that happens last week. Then you can take advantage of all those data stored that will help you to define the right performance model that you can. So the load policy that you will be applying your test will be more relevant, more realistic. So that's a real advantage, I would say.
Yeah, sure. And setting Dynatrace aside, I mean, these are things that in the NeoSense product, people could be doing that as well. I mean, they're connectable.
Yeah, of course. I mean, NeoSense is the synthetic monitoring. Mm-hmm. NeoSense combined with Dynatrace is more than relevant.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, it's awesome.
So let's get into a little bit more about the products. Mark, you brought up Dynatrace. Dynatrace has gone through an organizational shift, whereas they are pushing their products into a DevOps environment. They've moved to a DevOps model internally. Is that something that you've done internal at Neotis as well?
So a lot of things is happening internally. At the moment, we are totally refactoring the architecture of the product. So we've decided to move with microservices, containers, because we are planning soon to have a SaaS version of our product. So in that, once we have fully SaaS, then we could start to imply continuous delivery and even though go move on to DevOps. At the moment, we have moved to Agile. So we have sprints of, we have every release every 3 months and we have short sprints. So we try to add more and more features and deliver to continuously enhance the product while in parallel, we're building this new product that will be soon on the market.
So essentially, you're following very much what Dynatrace did with, you know, where they engineered an entirely new product using an entirely new development methodology, and then they essentially absorbed the historical product line into the new product. And do you see that your adoption of what your customers are doing is helping you in your messaging to those prospective customers?
I mean, we've been always focused on our customers and partners. Mm-hmm. So when we get the feedback, I think that's how we've been building our roadmap a couple of years back. So we need the feedback of our users. We need to know what is meaningful for them, where are they going to head in a couple of years, and how could we help them to achieve their objective in the load testing area, of course. So that's how we usually build up the product, and then also we look at what's the market is heading, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is when you come to DevOps, there is a lot of things which is really nice on the paper, and when you try to implement it on real life, then you have a couple of challenges. So there is a lot of things or a lot of small features that will help a lot the product. So, what we need to look at. We need to look at, okay, how is our partners and customers implementing the methodology around DevOps, and how can we help them to speed up or to automate?
Perfect. So, every product has a feature set that their customers just love. It's like when you say, "Tell me about Neoload," you see their eyes light up. And they start talking about one or two or five specific features. What do you hear back from your customers to say, "Hey, we love X. Thank you, thank you, thank you."
So I would start by quite a recent feature that was available 1.5 years ago. It's the user path maintenance. So user path for us is the name of a scenario, a script, I would say. So okay. The idea we thought, okay, let's reduce the maintenance times. So this is a feature that where most of our customers really appreciate it, because the idea is to reduce again the maintenance time. So Dell, for instance, is telling us that they have been able to reduce 90% of their maintenance time spent on maintaining the scenarios. So I would say that is the most popular feature. Mm-hmm. The second one, it's not a feature, it's always about designing. So all the small features, the frameworks or the correlation engine, we have extended a lot, since 4 years now, in order to, again, help reducing the design time. So most of the things that we our customers and our partners likes is more about this design time, which is in fact doesn't bring any value for in terms of output for a load testing report.
So let's speak about that maintenance issue, because it is something that people generally ignore for the most part.
And every tool has these, not just testing. I mean, you got development, refactoring, yep. You write code, you know, our products, every line of code needs some kind of maintenance if it's going to live for a while and provide value.
So I use a general rule of thumb of to maintenance, bring code up to current release, assuming that it's well documented and, you know, good understanding of the code and everything else. It's 50% of the level of effort of the original creation. So if a script took 42 days, it would take 21 days. Yeah, that's kind of on the absurd end of the spectrum, but yeah. You know, general
but
idea.
But one day to write a script, you would take half a day to maintain it.
Yes.
Moving forward, when another major change comes along.
Yeah. So give us a perspective on how you've attacked that maintenance side of the house. What is your level of effort to improve to the next release from a maintenance perspective? What's your gut feeling?
I mean, I think it really depends on the technology behind use for the load testing, I mean, creating the script, if it's API, sure, microservices, or something that utilizes the HTTP transport layer, the maintenance with the help of the user path maintenance is really powerful, because the idea of the feature is you have an existing script, and then you say, okay, I'm going to record a new version of that that script that I already designed, that I've already implied the logic, the variables, the assertions, and so on. So when you record new loads, is comparing every request, every response, every transactions that is defined in our product. And at the end of recording, it's try to merge. It's say, okay, here in this specific request, okay, you had three parameters that are common, but the last one is new. So I will leave it blank, or I will leave the recorded value, so you can just focus on correlating that aspect.
Okay. So instead of that manual effort that you have to go through for that 50%, you've automated that diff across multiple recordings and say, hey, here's the candidates. We're going to merge them together and highlight them for your attention.
Yeah, and even and more than that, if you have any say design logic with a if or a while or a for or whatever is behind, we are merging it. So everything is already there. So only the new assets are added in the old script. So I would say we keep the backup of the old script. Mm-hmm. We keep the recording of the new script. And then we create a new script, which is the merging of those two scripts.
I can see how that would reduce maintenance effort tremendously, especially for developers who just love to put in more hidden fields on forms. And they don't document it or let you know or anything. You know, it's just like, oh, the script doesn't work anymore.
But it's also the speed of design and the speed of the maintenance part, James. I think what I see in the product is, from a user path perspective, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And so being able to zoom in and see exactly what's changed from the user path, and then also know what, losing that history. You know, I've done this in other products for so many years that I don't, you know, you get this, it doesn't really do that history. What was this value in the last 10 releases? And you'd have to go back through version control or GitHub or something and look at the history of that script. And so this is something I think Neoload does pretty well. It's that speed of design is also, where did my script break and how quickly can I understand the context to fix it? We're also, you know, given, Henrik, your earlier comments about shifting left and moving faster, you have less time and the changes are coming more frequently. So the pressure is on. And so that's really valuable visual feature in the product for sure.
Yeah. And also about that aspect, we also want to take advantage of automation scripts, so Selenium or RunRex or Tosca or whatever is behind. Because when you have a continuous CI/CD or a pipeline, load testing is always after function testing. I mean, if a feature is not stable in a functional way, it doesn't make sense to go further for load testing, because you will just have exceptions.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Henrik, that's an important concept right there. I wish everybody here would hear that again. That is, if it's not stable for one, it cannot be stable for many.
And more than that, I mean, if you just load testing something which is not stable, you will make some stress, generate a lot of exception, but the load that you were trying to apply on the component, on the database, won't be there.
Yeah, I had this recently, actually, just as a total aside, you know, an app that had excessive logging overhead and slowed down the JVMs because they were throwing so many exceptions that it blew out the log4j backup. So what once was asynchronous logging got so bad that it backed up into the app and slowed everything down. And so it's a simple thing where if you don't have a healthy state, then you probably, in an automated pipeline, you would never send back to Jenkins, you know, thumbs up, green, let's go. You would say, you're orange, meaning I can't really give you a result. It's yellow, right, the middle build. Or in some cases, James, hey, if I can't even give you a stable run, I'm just red. I'm X. I'm out. And that's a valid thing. Henrik, I wanted to also ask, you know, for the things that all these changes that are happening with DevOps, with continuous operations, development, testing, et cetera, are there any key things that you know in recent history that are huge challenges to performance testers that you talk to?
I think it's the way, I mean, when it comes to testing a UI, testing a mobile device, load testing those type of applications, measuring user experience can be a challenge. I mean, if you also measuring the JavaScript time, measuring all the complexity of those new UI framework that are on the market is bring more extra things for the performance engineers to worry about. When 6 or 7 years ago, we didn't worry about those aspects because there was most of the logic were on the server side. There were less logic on the client side. So that brings things that we have to handle more. And we also have to figure out how can I precisely measure this last mile, that's the client time, I would say. If you take also the digital transformation, where you have browsers, mobiles, but also IoT, connected objects, measuring response times of IoT objects, I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I would say what is interesting is say how long did the message from the objects took to be sent and received by the end user on the mobile applications or the browser application. So that's also an extra challenge.
So you may have a challenge of, in this case, for inter-process communication, where the message starts on node A, it ends on node Z, and you have to measure the time in transit.
Yeah. I mean, say, especially when you have, when the response times is not a request response, it's about someone or something in the architecture sent something, and how long did it took to be received by one of the users?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is not a trivial issue to address.
Well, it gets to the points that you and I have talked about, James. There's all sorts of innovations or brand new kinds of tech. I think about testing Node.js running on the client. I think about even modern-day JavaScript frameworks that are running, single-page web apps that have all excessive third-party stuff running in them. There's some amazing new technologies that are really, really the challenge you're talking about, Henrik. And I think some of the innovations you mentioned, the user path again, these are things that can help, from Neoload's perspective, make it easier to deal with all these new technologies, and who knows what's going to come next, right?
And we're almost in the kind of the V model in terms of technology maturity. We went from thick client server to thin clients at the bottom of the V, and now we're back to thick client server. It's just that we're using HTTP as a transport. So some of those old techniques are going to have to come forward to some of the newer tools.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Henrik, I note that you've got a cloud option coming fast. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So 6 years ago, we've built a cloud platform. So we're not obviously a cloud provider. So we identified powerful cloud providers. So when we started, it was AWS, Rackspace, Giant, and the others. And the idea of that platform is, from one click within our product, customers could spin up load generators in a few minutes on several cloud providers, on several locations, and have them available in the UI. Or you can even book them. So you can just launch a new load and have them ready for load test. So this is, we've been working since 6 years. So since those 6 years, we've have a dedicated cloud team where mm-hmm. the main purpose is to evaluate new providers that are stable enough to be used for load testing. So strong CPU, good memory, stability of the bandwidth, or good DNS as well. And also add them in within the platform. So, of course, the cloud platform is also worry about, make sure that our platform is stable, robust enough, and bring small features about, let's have some fixed IP, so you can buy IPs and to avoid open firewalls or maintain firewalls, on and on and on. So the customer has a lot of flexibility with the cloud platform. And the cloud platform was new great things for us because it's just open door for extreme load testing or testing, say, huge spikes where we were not able to do it a couple of years back because the infrastructure creation, all those load generators was very painful.
Now, I heard rumors about a multi-million user performance test that Neoload was a part of recently. I would imagine that has to use a cloud platform.
Yes, definitely. So it's, I don't know if you know the TV show called The Voice.
Yes.
Yeah. So the idea of that is between each singer, there's a application available on a mobile device on the browser, and each of the audience or the people watching the show has 6 seconds to vote for the singer that just did the show live on the TV. So they had to test the situation where you have millions of users that will make the vote. I know in a few seconds. So pure spikes during a few seconds. So that was a really interesting project. And everything is through WebSocket. So a couple, 2 years ago, we did a 1 million test for them. And now it's been 2 million. In fact, they are increasing the load because every time they are selling the show to different countries, and before they sell it, they have to make sure, of course, that the platform is robust enough to take this new country having maybe more user that would be interesting to watch the show.
Oh, fantastic! So you've got a combination there of a huge spike, scheduling challenge. You've got WebSockets, which is a cool technology in and of itself. And then you have just the massive scale of load associated with it. So, I mean, that sounds like, from a project standpoint, really super interesting. And you get, kind of a cool association with The Voice.
And, in fact, we did a kitchen TV about the topic. So if you want to see how you can achieve those extreme load tests, just go on the YouTube channel of Neotis and look at the latest kitchen TV.
Yes, I particularly liked your reference on network virtualization dealing with banana latency.
Yeah, sometimes you have to take what you have, what the ingredients that you have available in your kitchen.
Kitchen pieces is great. We posted it in the Facebook group on PerfBytes Facebook group, so we sent it out there. The kitchen stuff is fantastic, Henrik. I love it. It's great. It's so funny.
Exactly. Exactly. So I want to come back to one of your other products, which is NeoSense. So we have NeoLoad and NeoSense. Can you give us a feel for, technology-wise, how these two products are related, how they complement each other, how you see NeoSense evolving as well as NeoLoad evolving?
So the NeoSense is the small brother of NeoLoad.
Okay.
The idea of NeoSense, it was to create a synthetic monitoring. So a lot of customers were asking for us to create a synthetic monitoring product using the technology of NeoLoad. So that's why we put the effort on NeoSense. And when you fit them Neolol plus Neosense, then you could definitely do a continuous performance testing or validation in your project, where you test with the dev, you test from the UI with a more representative environment, and before you go to production, then you implement a synthetic monitoring to get feedback on how the application behaves in production.
So now you have a longer life for this test artifact. You can hand it over the wall to production, and it could be a production monitor for that release, for the life of the release and prod.
Yes. And also which is interesting, we have a couple of customers that use Neosense not necessarily to monitor production, but using Neosense in all their testing environment. So they get alerts if you have API where the interface is not moving, they are running synthetic monitoring on all the environment to get feedback on, someone has deployed something in this environment and Neosense is pushing me alerts. So I get the feedback from email or SMS, whatever it is.
Oh, so that in that case, you might catch defects earlier in the life cycle and essentially bounce it back, so you don't have to worry about having these artifacts that accumulate in production or later in the life cycle.
Yep.
I hadn't thought about using it inside of your test environment. Mark, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a perfect idea. And actually, if you think about DevOps having these sort of cycles of promoting changes forward, but then bringing feedback back, shifting left, pulling things from ops forward, being able to calibrate your test environment and know that you're doing valuable testing that's fairly accurate. We see this with all the time, James, with people who are, they got their heads down on the tool and they forget what the real world is like. And it's a great way to sort of calibrate things and understand that your test is actually valuable. It's pretty accurate. You know, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Let's put that in the bag of tricks. You know, use your own monitoring tools inside of your own toolchain environment, to improve efficiency.
And the awesome innovation that would come, Henrik, would be I can actually do an extract from prod for the peak hour and an extract from load test in the peak hour and do a diff, compare them.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to put pressure on your product manager.
No, this is something we're discussing with a partner, which is really expertise on, I can say, data mining to do predictive analysis on different implementations. And we thought that maybe let's take advantage of your expertise, try to figure out if we can make something happen with your skill sets and load testing and production managing.
Cool. I think it's great. Awesome.
You've mentioned several times extensibility of the product. We've touched WebSockets, audio, video. One of the key features, I think, of performance test tools is the ability to extend it. And can you speak to extensibility in the field? If I encounter something brand new, how can I leverage Neolode and its extensibility to kind of build a solution around that?
So we have a toolkit. So since Neolode 5.0, so 5.0 is 3-4 years ago. So the toolkit has two SDK. The first SDK is what we call a data format extension. It's a sort of protocol. So if you have any encrypted data or serialized object that utilize the HTTP transport layer through HTTP or WebSocket, then you can code your decoder. That would be a new protocol, a fresh new protocol with the help of that SDK. So it's aware of be able to decode on the fly encrypted content. We deserialize it, present it into XML in the product. So then you can start correlating and design your scenario. So that's what the first step. The second thing with the SDK is custom action. So custom action, we build it to create integration. So that's how we've built integration with Perfecto, Selenium. We have a command line action. We have a lot of things. So all this SDK is, how can I generate load on a really low-level TCP protocol that is not necessarily supported out of the box by Nilo. But then I can just code the protocol in a custom actions, and that will be a sort of a graphical component available on UI. You can just drag and drop it, put the parameters, and that will send the request. So it's that's allowed us a couple of, for example, 2 years ago, I was able to do a load test for a customer that's wanted to test, okay, the situation where he has make some change on the LDAP or Active Directory of the company. And they say, okay, I want to test the situation where we have those 5,000 users opening the Windows session. So what we did, we do the Wireshark recording. We take every protocol utilized by a Windows opening session. So there is a NetBIOS connections, DNS check, there is LDAP and so on. So we code all those protocol one in each custom action. And then we design the workflow, say, okay, first let's send the NetBIOS connection, then the LDAP and so on and so on. And then we'll be able to correlate that and generate the load to simulate those 5,000 users opening their Windows session. So that's a really exciting thing for us, especially for me, as a working for the partners. This is my main role: help to customize the product, take Neoload and use it for different type of implementation. So maybe network testing or other really technical thing or project that initially Neoload were not designed for. So custom action is really a great thing for us. The last piece of the toolkit is all the APIs. So we have created the design API. So having a third party controlling our product to send traffic and create users and take advantage of all the advantage features like the user pass mentions that I just mentioned before. Also create user on the fly through custom actions. So let's say if you have a really weird protocol, and then you can create your own custom recorder. So that's really also a way to create some new things. And last is the runtime API to launch a test, stop a test, increase the load, generate a report, get the report back. So all those API, all those SDK is really useful, especially when it comes to new technology like IoT. So if you take, that's why we made the MQTT protocol. At the moment, I'm working on other protocol used by partners. So it's just a way to take Neoload and start testing really complex things that is not necessarily supported out of the box by the product.
Yeah.
How would a customer get the SDK? Can they just download it from your website, or is it a purchased item? How does that interface with the product?
So the SDK is Neoload is built on Java, so it's going to be a Java SDK.
Okay.
The SDK is Maven compatible, so you can create a fresh new Maven project, get the latest versions of our SDK. So we have archetypes. So we'll generate the skeletons of the project, and then you can start implementing. And within the AKA, there is a lot of API to control variables, to set objects within the memory of Neoload. So you can really take advantage of the standard features of Neoload within the SDK.
So Maven users could basically, as soon as they complete this podcast, could go and begin attaching all of the resources for the SDK and begin using it.
I think it's going to be a great topic for a kitchen TV, how to create customized custom actions using our SDK.
I think that does work, because it's sort of a recipe. Like, what are the ingredients to making a good extension? and what do you need to think about, and what's the process for implementing that and quote unquote cooking up an extensibility with the SDK. It's something I think we never did back in the load runner world. Like, we had an SDK, but it was a very, it wasn't a whole lot supporting it. It was only for very few gurus. So yeah, definitely do a kitchen episode on that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'd have to do that. It's going to be in my to-do list.
Yeah. And that really brings me to kind of the next topic. I really like your Neeload test kitchen. I really do. I think it's just a cool video podcast series. What was the idea behind that? I mean, were you stuck at work late one night and you're in the kitchen and discussing products and you're moving a banana around and a apple, and you know, where did the thought of that come from?
So everything started saying, let's make how-to videos. And I thought, okay, what could be a funny way to present a how-to video? And the thing is, most of the time when you look at how-to, people name it a cookbook. So I said, whoa, that could be funny to make this how-to videos in a kitchen, where you try to explain things through like a cooking session. So that's everything started from there. In fact, I said, okay, should we do in the bed with Neotis, or should we be Neeload Test Kitchen? So I think it's more accurate to do it at the guest kitchen.
Yeah, just one time, I'd like to see you take a printout of somebody's code and put it in a blender and hit frappe on it.
Yeah, that's modern day refactoring of the code, just done.
And a food processor, and look at the output and say, that's not going to
scale. Yeah,
making
a milkshake, a code milkshake. I like it.
That is a great idea, in fact. I would try to do that.
Exactly. So in the near term, you do have a kind of an update to your whole cloud infrastructure product for Neeload coming out. For customers who are not involved in the beta and might be interested in getting involved in the beta, how would they do that?
Yes. So at the moment, we've refactoring the product, like I said, into a web version of the product. So the way currently Neeload works, it's a thick client that you have installed in your laptop. The idea in the next coming month, you will still do the design from a thick client by taking advantage of all the design features that we've built since those 12 years. And then having a UI where you could launch a test either on-premise or from the cloud and do the analysis. So that's the fresh new things that we have on the product. We wanted to go on the web to bring features around collaboration. So being able to share assets, to create graph and publish them around the different people watching, launch a test, go home, open the tablet or a mobile device or a really large screen on a mobile device and monitor what happens on the during the test. So that was the main idea with this version. So at the moment, like you said, there's a tech preview running. In July, we will have the first version of Neeload Web on the market, so mainly on SaaS at the moment. And last of the year, we will have normally the full stack available as a SaaS and on-premise.
Dare I ask about the Age of Empires integration?
I have to convince the developers to make a secret combination of keys on the keyboard that brings the Age of Empires on the screen.
Or VR, either one. You know, yeah, it would be kind of cool. I guess this brings us fairly close to the end of our conversation. I really only have two questions left. Is what trends are you seeing, and what are you looking forward to in the coming year?
So there is a lot of things we're looking at in different areas. So DevOps, of course, how do we make things more efficient in the DevOps world, especially taking advantage of all the configuration management script, / Puppet and Chef. They also, on the web version for us, it's going to be open a lot of doors in a way where we've been creating plugins for Jenkins, for TeamCD, for Bamboo. Now with this verb version, we can really enhance those plugins by just calling one of the frame from the web portal. So making the trend, comparing it to a baseline. Also, like I just mentioned, by predictive analysis is something that we definitely have to invest. How could we make the our customers make a decision in a very easy way without having to take a few hours to monitor or analyze everything? And also, there is a really hot topic, and I think it's really important to look at it. It's the AI.
And are you looking at the AI features from your partners like Dynatrace and how they've integrated?
I think, yeah. In the short term, I think we want to take advantage of one agent, for example. If one agent is enough powerful in a testing environment, having a one agent pointing out after the test or during the test what is the main issues and what is the main problems, that would be really cool. In the AI on the load testing, I think there is two main subjects. How can I make the product learns to design, to create variables on the fly? So that's more on the design. More on the analysis. How can I detect pattern or detect a potential? I mean, there is always common problems when it comes to load test or architecture design. So let's suggest or see, I've seen this during that timeline, and this is a consequence of that. So help bringing to speed up the analysis again.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at, I mean, look at what Google I.O. is announcing with the TPU stuff. I think it's TPU2, which is teraflops worth of machine learning sitting right there in GCP in the cloud. Amazon's got some similar stuff that we talked about with Lambda. And, you know, as you migrate and put data about performance in the cloud, all the ops and all of this, it's a little bit more efficient to actually leverage some of that. But to your point, Henrik, what are the questions that we want to regularly or more quickly put to an AI component to regress over a given set of performance knowledge? Is it, you know, the anomalies or the prediction of why do certain anomalies happen? When do they happen? Suggesting futures based on trends. I think to some extent we rely on the human brain with an engineer and who can use Neoload to come up with simple scenarios for workloads and still learn a heck of a lot about good code, resiliency, reliability. But at some point, you know, we're going to have to take all of this amazing amount of data and stick it in AI to really have people predict what to change. And it brings us all the way back around to the predictive analytics that were coming out of all the remember the capacity planning estimation companies, James, back in the 90s? Was TeamQuest is still around. Hyperformix is now at CA. You know, those were, Heinrich, those were like really lengthy, arduous capacity analysis tools. But the algorithms would still be relevant within the modeling, the queuing model. So, yeah, that could be really cool to see a machine learning apply that faster and make it easier to do those estimations and capacity analysis. This is awesome.
So let's close it out. Mark, final thoughts?
I think I'm really looking forward to seeing more, maybe do some hands-on stuff with you, Henrik, and get people to consider what they can do with Neotis, with Neoload, that they maybe have never really. I like the user path idea. I think a lot of our listeners in the Perf Bytes world should take a look at it. One thing I did want to mention, Neoload obviously has a trial period, much like everyone else. So there's a community edition of Neoload, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys, everyone listening out there, you can download it, give a shot, and start using it today. Take a look at it. And it is, I do like also the fact that it's platform independent. You could run it on Windows, you can run it on Linux, you could run it on Java, anywhere. And sometimes that's good as well.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Mark, Macintosh, Mac.
You could run it on Mac. You could run it on a Linux. I would run it on Linux. I'm a Ubuntu guy, so you know that works.
And if you're a Raspberry Pi fan, you can also take advantage of Raspberry Pi to use at the Loge Demeter.
The new ones have what, quad core? So yeah, you could do that. Yeah, that works.
Heinrich, final thoughts?
Yes, I think the best thing is, like you said, go have a try. There is it's a freemium version, so you can have a 50 virtual license during 12 months, and then it will be also, you can reuse it next year, it will automatically generate a new license. So the idea is have a look, have a try. That's the best thing.
My final thoughts is Heinrich, thank you for joining us today for this discussion. And everyone, go grab your Raspberry Pi, download a copy of Neotis Neo Load and the Maven extensions, and go to town playing with some IoT stuff.
I would say you're going to bake up a Neo Load load generator on a Raspberry Pi cooked in the kitchen. Get it? Pi, kitchen.
I have to do it, in fact, because it's I've been using for IoT.
Yeah.
So that will be also cool things to do it during a kitchen tea.
In the kitchen, how to bake performance pie. I love it. Henrik, thanks, man. We'll see you on the next show. We'll go a little deeper in the products.
Thanks.
Well, we've come once again to the end of another episode of News of the Damned. As usual, I want to thank my mother for listening and her support. And Heinrich, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Don't forget to listen to the latest news of the Swedish chef on the Neotis YouTube channel.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes, thank you to Neotis and Heinrich and Thibault for jumping in to support the PerfBytes community, our audience, that's you, the listener, the entire industry, and of course the future performance engineers all around the world, some of whom, James, might be listening right now.
Excellent.
Today's show is powered by James Soliver's Summer Berry Pie and Champagne.
Summer Berry Pie. That's running on a Raspberry Pi, right?
Yeah.
It could be. Yes. And of course, keep in mind that the contents of this show is protected by oven mitts. When you remove that pie from the oven after drinking several glasses of very strong champagne, it can be dangerous. You might touch the hot pie plate and get burned. Would consider equally that without oven mitts that you would get burned if you were to attempt to abscond with the contents of this Perf Bytes episode and publish it anywhere else in the world. Watch it. That's hot.
For more information about Perf Bytes and Perf Bytes News of the Damned, please visit the show's website at www.perfbytes.com or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, and the Facebook. You can always tune in and subscribe to the Perf Bytes podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, YouTube, and testingpodcast.com. Just open up your favorite listening app, search for Perf Bytes, and click on the subscribe button.
Subscribe!
Please send us an email with your questions or thoughts to ask@perfbytes.com or leave us a voicemail at 77LOADPERF. That's 775-623-7373.
And plus one. If you're international, like Heinrich would be plus 162775.
True. Put
the international exchange in there. Yeah. The Perf Bytes show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash, and the Ministry of Testing, the Computer Measurement Group, and the Workshop on Performance and Reliability. And of course, the Software Test Professionals community of software testers. We always hope to see you at the next SDPCon conference coming up soon here in Virginia, actually near DC. Near the airport here on the East Coast. That's in the fall of September, which is pretty awesome. Heinrich, any shows coming up this summer that you'll be at that people can come visit you?
We're doing a ramp up. So we have several cities in the US, and we will also replicate that in Europe as well. So don't have the date in mind, but if you go to our website, all the those roadshow will be listed in the our events.
Yeah, you can just go to the Neotis website, N-E-O-T-Y-S, neotis.com/events, and you can see a bunch of these. The Ramp Up Conference is going to be in London, in New York, Chicago. So check it out for the Summer Roadshow, and you can go visit Henrik, the chef of the Performance Kitchen, which is pretty awesome. Thanks, Henrik. We'll see you on the next show, man.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah. Now it's time to pop the cork on that champagne, cut yourself a slice of pie, sit down, and share this podcast with those that you love.
Bye. Ha 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 ha